everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Pioneer Perspective. As always, my name is Brad, otherwise known as Bradsifer, and I am joined by Alex Lochtwain himself, the new homeowner. Alex Lochtwain, congratulations on
thank you.
Essentially being a homeowner at this point. Isn't it great? Do you feel good?
On one hand, it feels good, but I've been living on my own now with my partner the moment I started working full-time. So I've never had the luxury a lot of my friends have. We're having the salary of a full-time person, but not the spending. You know, because that part kind of sucks. You get your salary, and you're like, oh, that's a lot of money. And then you're like, oh, but like rent and everything's due in like 3 days, and then a lot of that money's going to be gone again.
And you need groceries and all that stuff. So,
oh,
yeah.
God. I don't want to sound like an old person, but fuck. If I now go do grocery shopping, I get a fucking small heart attack every time.
Isn't that great? Isn't that fun? Don't you love it?
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. I love capitalism. Well,
So we are here to do the wonderful top 10, as always, but we're doing it with a little bit of a twist because I have been very busy with my job, as has Alex been. But Alex is able to focus on Magic full-time when it comes to, for the most part, you've played Baldur's Gate and stuff like that too.
A lot.
But as far as content goes, Magic is your baby. And I have been juggling between this and Marvel Snap stuff and everything like that. So I'm sitting here going like, I have not had time. I was like, I'll wait until the full set's released and I can look at it and stuff like that. And the full set's been released for a little bit now, and I just still haven't looked at any card. I have not seen a single card from this set. I have no idea what's going on. So rather than put together a bullshit top 10 list in about 20 minutes by going, these cards look kind of cool, Alex has already made a top 10 list. He's going to present it to me, and I'm going to go and give you my initial reaction to the card, and we'll go from there. So this is primarily Alex's top 10 list, and I'll be giving constructive criticism as a first-time reaction to cards I have not seen yet.
Doesn't we're making it fun? React content. We're turning a podcast into React content. We're just staying ahead, staying with the times, you know?
Yeah. And let me go ahead and actually pull up. Here we go. I got Scryfall pulled up. I can go to any card you say. Just please tell me the cost of these fucking cards, of like what color they are, so I'm not like panicking and what they are.
I just love the abbreviation of the set, that it's just woo. Just woo. Every time. Woo.
My word document is called woo top 10. I read it as the word of woe. Like, woe is me.
Mm. It's just that in Dutch, O-E is an oo sound. So I guess my Dutch brain just reads it as woo.
That's fair. We can't all be perfect English speakers.
Exactly. Like for us, Wednesday is Woensdag. It literally starts with woo. So often abbreviated to woo. This is the Wednesday set. anyway, I guess we'll just get into it. I start with a land. So you can go all the way down to the bottom of the
fucker.
List.
Oh, wait, hold on.
It's the lands. Is a dual land.
Hold on.
You almost had it?
I'm getting there.
You got it on the right.
Restless Spire.
So, Restless Spire is the Izzet dual land. So, they've got a whole cycle of restless lands. And they basically just all follow the same idea. Tapped land, taps for two colors, can turn into a creature. I don't think all of them have an effect only on your turn, but at least Restless Spire has. And then they do something when they attack. So, Restless Spire is kind of the only one that somewhat intrigues me. So, again, enters tapped, blue or a red, and then for a blue and a red, so only two mana, it becomes a 2/1 that has first strike on your turn, and whenever you attack, you scry one. Now, mainly the reason I'm interested in this one is because of how cheap it is to activate. Playing in my control style decks, as I always do, I've been really annoyed playing Hall of Storm Giants because it's so expensive to activate. It's often the only thing you do in a turn. So basically, the moment you want to start attacking with Hall of Storm Giants, you're going shields down. Whereas if you play something like Den of the Bugbear or Hive of the Eye Tyrant, at the point where you would normally be going shields down to attack with Hall of Storm Giants, obviously trade-off is the game's over in three hits, but still I kind of hate going shields down and giving my opponent the opportunity to like top deck to some sort of powerful planeswalker and, you know, crawl back from the game. I can just play Hive of the Eye Tyrant and hold up interaction. And this card does that even better. So it's only two mana. Two damage is, you know, it's not great, but it's an okay block. It's got first strikes. Your opponent isn't going to block it with random 1/1s. And then getting the scry in just kind of means, like, you're playing that, like, I'm holding up interaction. But because you're constantly scrying, your card quality is going to be better. So I feel like it's good at playing that game. Now, it being a tap land is a huge problem. Like, and might just keep it from viability. But just because this one is the cheapest, I thought this one had potential. All the other ones are like 4 or 5 mana to activate. I think they're all unplayable.
Yeah. I can see what you're talking about with this. Now, and specifically control, it being a 2/1 is where I'm kind of like, ooh, that is a very long clock that you got to get through, right? That's 10 attacks if you haven't done anything else so far. And I know you have other cards in Grixis specifically, like you have your Maestro's Charm to deal 5 and stuff like that. So I get it. You have reach beyond just the 2/1. And of course, this wouldn't be the only creature land in that deck. You'd probably still run Hive at a couple number, right?
And even so, like, I do agree. It's just in the fact that I like... and that's where like Hull comes in, where it can sort of be your only win condition. This is definitely one that like comes in for the last like punch. But through Shocklands, Thoughtseize, if you're playing like what I'm currently playing with like Fairy Mastermind and stuff, maybe you're playing like an Izzet version with like Fable of the Mirror Breaker and stuff. You're getting damage in, but you can often leave your opponent at like 10 or 8, right? It's sort of where they sort of naturally end up as the game progresses. And then the clock's not as long, right? So I think it's more for that point. So when you've reached like turn 6 or 7 and you're like, hey, I'm not quite ready to go shields down, but I would like this game to be over. That's where I feel like this. If you find yourself in that situation, I think you can consider this land.
Yeah, and I mean, it is represented as like a similar, like I'm thinking... At the same time with Hive being a menace and then this being a first strike, you effectively have two, you know, evasive creatures to an extent, which is pretty nice. And the scry
you don't
definitely
want too many
helps
Hives because it taps for mono black. So, like, the idea that this could tap for blue and red is kind of cool.
Yeah. I have no problem with this card being in the list. I think it's cool. Comparatively to the other ones, though, I mean, I haven't really looked at these, so now we're going to get the chance to. So we have the Orzhov one is 4 mana, becomes a 1/4 white and black nightmare creature, and then it drains for 2.
It's just kind of Shambling Vance, but...
I kind of like that one. I mean, it's a very nice body for a blocker. I know these are all 4 pretty much. God, the Simic one's 5. Let's look at that one. 5 mana until end of turn, becomes a 5/5 green and blue plant with trample. Whenever it attacks, up to one other target creature on base power 3/3. Okay.
I mean, their direct comparison is just the Zendikar cycle.
Yeah.
Right? And in that way, I feel like none of them outperform their counterpart except for Restless Spire. Where, like, I don't think Restless Fortress at least isn't that much better than, than Shambling Vents. Restless Cottage kind of does a Hive of the Eye Tyrant impression. But then I think the tapped land is just, like, that's so much worse that I would want to have, I'll just run Hive. Mm-hmm. Restless, what the fuck is that word? Restless Bivouac?
I feel like I have to
polish up my French here. You know, that's a 2/2 and it grows whenever it attacks with 1/1 card on a target creature you control, but that just feels really slow and it's Boros and Boros decks want to be fast. So that's why in like a it just doesn't work. It's a good Boros card, it just doesn't work for what Boros wants to do.
I mean, dude, these full arts are great though.
Okay, as per usual, the art's great in the set.
Yeah. All right, what's the next one you got? What's number 9?
The next one, I guess this should have either been number 10 or number 1 for flavor reasons, but it is The End. It's a black card. four mana.
Oh, I know where that one is. Hold on. We're getting there. Wait. No. Yeah.
You sell it. You sell it.
So,
the end.
I like how it's organized by E, where I would expect it to be organized by T, because it starts with the, but that's okay.
The end. It is two black black instant, and it has Fateful Hour, except it doesn't say Fateful Hour on it. This spell costs two mana less if your life total is five or less. So it's a two mana card in a pinch. Exile target creature or planeswalker. Search its controller's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with the same name as that permanent and exile them. That player shuffles, then draws a card for each exiled from their hand this way. It just combines an extraction effect and removal. Obviously, four mana. This is Vraska's Contempt, but you don't gain life, but instead you gain an extraction effect. Not always the most appealing. Four mana is slow. But I do think currently there's a couple of decks where I think this can be very effective. We'll talk about it later, but I think Phoenix is definitely, you know, poised for a comeback. This is obviously great against Phoenix. That deck tends to be pretty threat light. And if you exile a manland, I'm pretty sure it has the same name. It doesn't become something with a different name. So if you hit your opponent's Hall of Storm Giants, then you get rid of all of them. As long as they're not on the battlefield. And if you play against Phoenix, that tends to have like four Phoenix and then four Shredder or Thing in the Ice and then like two or three other cards to win the game. So there's a reasonable amount of threats, but there are very few threats. Or if I'm playing against Greasefang, I cast the end on Greasefang and now I'm kind of playing the game on easy mode. And there's a bunch of decks that just have cards like this, right? If you deal with Shouldred out of Rakdos midrange, that makes it a lot easier to deal with. So just because creatures are generally like the powerful cards nowadays, I feel like extraction effects would often be thrown at creatures anyway, so actually being able to deal with them on board is kind of sick. And I think important for that, if you play against Phoenix, people will often shortcut, and they're like, oh, go to combat, I get my Phoenixes. But that wouldn't work, because it doesn't exile all the ones on the battlefield. So you have to wait, let the first trigger resolve, that Phoenix enter, and then be like, in response to the Phoenix, the next Phoenix's trigger, I'm going to exile the one on the on the board, because that means they get deleted from the graveyard and the other triggers don't do anything. So I think that's something to like be careful with, because that can like get you annoying judge calls with angle shooting people who are like, well, they said it was okay for me to get my Phoenixes back, and then they just dump them all on the battlefield at once. So good to be careful with that, and good to be not a dick about it when you're a Phoenix player.
So, I mean, this card seems great for like Rakdos Mirrors, especially with Shieldred. Shieldred is such a great endgame finisher, and so many mid-range decks and things like that where it's going to be really nice to hit it, especially if you're the Rakdos player that also has a Shieldred out. So you get your opponent's Shieldred off the board while keeping yours. You let them draw, you know, three other cards, and then you drain them for six. That seems pretty good. So like, and I mean, yes, you can essentially let them draw into removal spell for your Shieldred, but it's not going to be the end, or hopefully won't be. I guess if you're boarding, then they might draw into it. I don't know. This is weird. And when it comes into the mirror match, but I think overall this hitting finishers, and it really sucks for if you're a control player like yourself, Alex, I think you have to be a lot more aware of this card existing, because now you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to side in like this finisher now, or like have this one finisher in my deck.
And then just buy and you just lose everything. Yeah.
And
then,
okay,
like, people have already done that before. They're like, oh, when they notice, they could notice like, oh, like I had a time where like, well, most of your win condition is Gearhulk, and people would go like, you'd play against Niv and they'd be like, oh, Slaughter Games your Gearhulk. And now you're like, shit, now I have three cards to win the game with. And that's going to be hard in a deck with a lot of removal. The only thing that I kind of hate about this, obviously it's a 4-mana card, and I'm like, it could be good against Greasefang, but I don't like the idea of bringing in a card against Greasefang that can't actually kill Greasefang when it's racing.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like this is never like a high numbers card, because when you get in a dangerous spot, you don't want to be drawing a 4-mana card when your opponent's about to win on turn 3. So that's the kind of like, that makes this card a little iffy, but... I really wish this was a Dimir card and it said exile target creature, planeswalker, or spell. Like, I'm so sad it doesn't do that. So I'll just wait a few years till the game power creeps to the point that it will.
You know, we'll get there eventually.
Exactly. Don't worry about it. The next one is... God, this is an adventure card. I think it's a it's technically going to be a Boros card, so I guess it's going to be a multicolor. It's Kellen the Fey-Blooded. Think you're on the right track.
What's the main card?
I think you just went past. It's red, but it's red and white, and I just saw the hybrid-y cards, so you're on the right track. I'm pretty sure. Keep going, because I saw like the dragon here. Yeah.
Oh, here it is.
Right.
Woo!
Kellen the Fey-Blooded. 2 and a red, so 3 mana for a 2/2 double strike. But I'll get to his adventure first, because that's the important part. Birthright Boon. 1 and a white for a sorcery. Search your library for an aura or equipment. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. And then his actual text is, he is a 2/2 with double strike. Other creatures you control get +1/+0 for each aura and equipment attached to Kellen the Fey-Blooded. And this is just a weapon tutor for Hammer. That's mainly what it is. Yeah. It sucks that this guy is in the Warrior. Like, I feel like they ran out of text box, but if they could have made him a human fairy warrior, and that would have been sick. Or they could have just made him a fairy warrior and given him slightly different art. I don't know. So that's obviously a big downside. But he's just a weapon tutor. He's a playable card, right? A 3-mana 2/2 double strike is nothing great, but you can literally... What's the... Resolute Strike is what it's called. Like the equip. That's still throw this on him and he's just a 4/4 double strike, right? It's nothing to scoff at either. And obviously, being a double strike threat, you throw a hammer on him and it's lethal in one go.
Yep.
So I think this is just going to be a good card for Hammer Time. Like, I think currently they run like Open the Armory, which is literally just this guy's adventure. So, like, why not run this guy instead? And just have
they run Open the Armory and then the Saga. Fighter not Saga. Class? What is it? The Fighter Class, the class card. Now,
Fighter
what's
class
interesting about this is
because
it's
Boros color, so it's harder with Mutavolt.
Yeah. With this guy, though, they already sometimes run in the Hammer deck. Oh, what is it? It's like a 3-drop that like does something for your equipped creatures. It's literally similar stat to this and like it's similar effect. I just can't remember what it does. I think it's like all equipped creatures have double strike. Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah. I think that's like a 2-mana 1/1 or something. It's from Zendikar Rising.
I'm pretty sure it's 3 mana. I could have sworn it was like the same cost. But anyway, like this effectively can fill that slot too, essentially. It's the best of both worlds. It's just any time a card has flexibility in terms of what it can do, it can be the way you find your hammer, or it can just be a creature that helps, you know, pump up the hammer creature even more. So I think that's I don't know. We'll see Hammer Time make a comeback in Pioneer. It's a little tough, I think, but
But I was just interested. This just seemed like a straight upgrade for the deck. Like,
yeah.
If you run Open the Armory, you run this card instead. So, and even just if you never get to really equip it, like, free shit's always good. So, you already run a card, now you occasionally have a 3-mana 2/2 double strike. So, pretty good.
And the art's fantastic on all these. Like, I'm...
Yeah.
I know we're a bit fatigued of, like, all the alternate arts, but, like, these look pretty cool.
They are very good. Like, the Eldraine ones this time around are very, very good. The next one's probably the biggest cope, but... Oh, it's literally the card next to it, so that's easy. It's Mosswood Dread Knight.
Aha.
This is a 2-mana, 1 and a green for a 3/2 trample, and more text, I'll get to it. It is a human knight, and its adventure is Dread Whispers. 1 and a black for a sorcery, you draw a card and you lose a life. And the text on Mosswood Dread Knight is, whenever it dies, you may cast it from your graveyard as an adventure until the end of your next turn. Obviously important to note, when you cast it as an adventure, it goes back into exile. So if your opponent doesn't, and you can cast it again as a creature, and it dies, and you adventure it, and you cast it as a creature again. So this This is just infinite value if your opponent doesn't have a way to exile it. And given that both halves are pretty cheap, right? 2 mana, 3-2 trample is obviously not great, but it's fine, right? Trample's all right. It can attack planeswalkers. It can, you know, can't be chumped, even though it's quite easily chumped. It's a 3-2, but... and then just the 2 mana draw a card. It's just, you kind of cycle it, but you actually get to cast it. So I think this is just a cool Golgari value piece. But again, I think it's cope because if you're playing mid-range, just play Rakdos mid-range. But, you know, for the Golgari mid-range players out there, maybe you can finally retire your Grimflayer.
Yeah. I mean, I think this Golgari just needs its own, like, identity.
I think Golgari just needs Fable banned. Like, that's it, really.
Yeah, that's very true. If Fable gets banned, yeah, I think Golgari brings a lot to the table. You have Assassin's Trophy. You have, what's the one?
Glissa.
You have Glissa, yep. What's the three or less for cost that it kills? Abrupt Decay. Get Abrupt Decay. Yeah. You have a lot of good removal and stuff, and of course, Glissa is awesome in the deck.
Between Glissa, I would love to play this card. It's a lot of value, but it's just value and grindy, and it doesn't go over the top where Fable can go over the top, which is just like, just gives an angle to your game plan that Golgari doesn't have. So
yeah, just the ability to have two Fables out and go copy, 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 copy.
Yeah. Or even just like, you know, like copy your Bone Crusher Giant. I'm just going to throw 4-4 yep. four at your face every turn.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
That type of shit you just can't keep up with when you're playing Golgari. So, and it's not worth it to play Jund because your mana gets become shit. So really, this card is kind of there in the hope slash cope that Fable gets banned eventually, and then this card's going to see a lot of play, I think. Well, a lot, but it's going to see a reasonable amount of play because people just like playing cards like this. So,
and given the most recent ban announcement we had where they were like, Pioneer seems fine, and that was pretty much it. That's all they said in the announcement.
Yeah. Let's just see where we end up. Maybe they were like, Wilds of Eldraine is going to shake things up, and I have my doubts. But there's a lot of cool stuff in this set, including Hearth Elemental. This is a mono red card.
Going up. Hold on. Hearth with an H.
Yes.
Found it.
Hearth Elemental. This is a 6 mana, a 5 and a red for a 4/5 elemental. I'll read the adventure again first. Stoke Genius. 1 and a red for a sorcery. Discard your hand, then draw 2 cards. And the creature itself is a 4/5 elemental with this spell costs X less to cast, where X is the number of cards in your graveyard that are instant sorceries and or have an adventure. I feel like this could just pretty easily be a 1 or 2 mana 4/5, like in a lot of decks, kind of without trying. And then the adventure is sometimes, when you top deck it, it's just 2 mana draw 2, because this card's going to go to the adventure zone anyway. If you want stuff in the graveyard, there you go. Right, this is obviously fantastic in Dredge. Now, we don't have Dredge, but this is fantastic in Dredge, where you just dump your whole hand and then dredge twice. So I saw this for Modern, where someone pointed that out. Like, this card's really cool Dredge card. But then I was like, yeah, but you could do Pioneer shit with this, right? Even with the adventure. Mm-hmm. But again, this just being like a 1 or 2 mana, 4 or 5, it's kind of a Gurmog Angler, but you don't have to delve.
Yeah. No, I really like this. I like the fact that it's discard your hand first as the cost and then the draw two. Oftentimes, you see a lot of these red spells be like, yeah, draw two, discard two kind of thing.
Actually, even better, discard your hand, then draw 2 cards. After discard your hand, there's no cost. That's not a cost. So if your opponent counters Stoke Genius, you actually get to keep your hand. Which, if you're playing Dredge, you're probably sad about. But if you're playing a deck that does something even remotely fair, not having to actually dump your hand when your card gets countered is pretty sick, too.
Yeah, gives you a chance to refill. And then, of course, yeah, this going to the adventure. So this, you know, is just safe over there. And being, like you said, a lot of times a 1 or 2 mana 4/5, I mean, this gives me vibes of Hollow One, right? Of like this really cheap, effective body. And in the right deck, this can be something that's, you know, on its own is not very scary, but when you have a bunch of them on the board and other backup alongside it in the context of the deck, this can be a genuine threat. And this is also going to be fucking insane and limited, by the way.
Oh, yeah, this card's going to be very good. There's so many good adventures, so I'm going to assume your average limited deck is going to end up with a billion adventure cards in it. So from that alone, this is going to be a cheap threat.
Five-color adventures, refill. Maybe.
Speaking of refills, the next card, this card is going to be absolutely fucking cracked in Modern and might be all right in Pioneer, but I can definitely see spots where it's good, so I do think it's worth talking about. It is Up the Beanstalk. It's a green card.
Is that green? Okay. All right. Gotta go the other way. Fuck.
Magic naming is very conventional, so that helps. I've been getting into Yu-Gi-Oh! Into Edison format. I've been looking into it. And then you notice, like, man, Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards are literally all over the place.
What is Edison format?
It's up until May 2010. So it's the end of... Quick Yu-Gi-Oh! Tangent. I'll keep it short. It's literally the set before Xyz cards enter the game.
So it's synchros and...
It's synchro.
That's cool.
So, and that's exactly, like, till 2010 is, like, when I was... Like, when this format happened when I was 13... Which was prime, like, me and my friends going to the shop, buying Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards, playing in the attic, you know, and, like, having a good time. So it's all these cards, like, I know, which is really a breath of fresh air, because if I look at modern Yu-Gi-Oh!, I have no fucking clue what is going on.
I like XZ cards, though. I think they're really fun. I think it's where links come in is where you start to lose me a bit. But you know,
yeah,
you
like
do,
I'm not even the biggest synchro fan, but I just like the era. Like, there's a bunch of cool cards. Nothing's too broken. I could play Frog
for,
Monarchs, which is just Monarch cards are
Crystal
cool.
Wing.
And frogs are my favorite animals. So.
You have Crystal Wing in that format. How is that not the best deck in the entire format?
Not that I know. The best deck's like Black Wing or something. But anyway, we can talk about this later. But let's keep it to Magic. So Up the Beanstalk is one and a green. For an enchantment, when Up the Beanstalk enters the battlefield, and whenever you cast a spell with mana value 5 or greater, draw a card. So, by itself, 2 mana, draw a card. Nothing too fancy, but fine. Again, you could flicker it with Yorion, and then you even draw an extra card. So, like, fine, value piece, whatever. What mainly is, like, the card that made it sort of click in Pioneer is that Leyline Binding is a 7 mana card, or a 6 mana card. You play it for 1 mana, but it is a 6 mana card. And that is already, like, in Modern, you do it with stuff like Solitude or Fury, right? And it goes absolutely haywire, right, when you play this card. And you just draw 25 cards of your 2-drop. But even in Pioneer, I could see potential for it, and especially going into the future... I can definitely see them print cards more often that, like, cheat on their mana cost. So, like, Hearth Elemental, right? That is a 6-mana card, but you never cast it for 6 mana. Delve spells, you know, like, again, like, Gurmok Angler, Dig Through Time are cards you cast for less. So this is a thing that Magic just does every once in a while, which means this card is only gonna get better. And the fact that it just cantrips as soon as it enters makes the opportunity cost fairly low. Obviously not zero, taking turn 2 off is not a good idea, but you can come back from it with the type of deck that plays this.
Yeah, I like it in a Fires deck. That's the one that already wants to play a bunch of smaller cost enchantments, things like that, and the fact that it cycles for one off rip, and then allows you to refill off of these big players in the late game, where normally Fires has a tendency to kind of run out of steam a bit. Of course, you have the other draw spells in the deck as well, like the Omen of the Sea and things like that. But this allows you to have another way to kind of extend your game plan and just be able to play your big thing. They kill it or whatever. You're like, well, I got the cycle anyway. So you're not sitting there hell-bent the entire game when this
is on
the field.
Yeah, this could be like, if it turns out it's better than Omen, this could just replace Omen. If it turns out it's like complementary to Omen, this could be like your Omen 5 or 6. Right in that deck, like that's a whole
I could see this being like a couple numbers. I'm not sure about the full playset. I'd have to look at a list,
Yeah, I don't know how many Omen they play. I don't even know if they play a playset of Omen of the Sea. But like,
I'd be shocked if they don't. You're a Yorion deck.
True, but like, but this draws you two cards when you play Yorion, because you first get to draw a card of casting Yorion because it's a 5-drop, and then you flicker this. So in that way, this works better if you, like. Like, I've always found Omen of the Sea kind of a bad card, and then people are just like, yeah, but if I flicker it with Yorion, I'm like, yeah, but, you know, isn't it already enough that you got a 4 or 5 for free? Like, do you need to play bad cards to make the good card better? But then, yes. If you are going that way, just play this card, right? Then you actually draw two cards of Yorion. And more cards is more better. That's what I've been told.
I can't argue with that.
Now we're heading into the top four, and frankly, the top four, I felt like I had a top four down really quickly, where I was like, I feel like these are like the four best cards, so I would consider this like a cutoff point. Like, now we're going into the, like, these cards kind of have to be good, and the other ones could be good. And the first one is just straight up cheating. It is Torch the Tower. It is a red card. One red. Torch the
Bargain.
Tower. Yes, it is a one red mana instant with Bargain. So Bargain means you may sacrifice an artifact, enchantment, or token as you cast this spell, and then it will do something, as we'll see here. Torch the Tower deals 2 damage to target creature or planeswalker. If this spell was bargained, instead deal 3 damage and scry 1. If a permanent dealt damage by Torch the Tower would die this turn, exile it instead. So, it took us about 15 years to power creep Magma Spray, and then it took us, like, a year and a half to power creep Flame Blast Bolt. This is just better Flame Blast Bolt. It does exactly what Flame Blast Bolt does, but it has Bargain. So that's why I'm like, this card's cheating, right? This card is going to see play, literally... Roll the clip of when we talked about Flame Blast Bolt, right? Magma Spray is playable. This is straight up better. It's just going to replace it. Torch the Tower. Flame Blast Bolt is just going to be replaced. You will never see Flame Blast Bolt again. Now, the upside is the biggest hooray about this. Magma Spray was a very cool card with very cool art and cool stuff to choose from. Flame Blast Bolt, sorry for the artist. I fucking hate the card. It looks awful. Like, I just really don't like how it looks. It's just like vampire. He's looking like his face is being burned off. But frankly, that's not a face I like to look at. And this card looks great. And it's going to get an FNM promo that looks even better. So, like, you know, this it's going to get like the, like, oh, the whole card turns red. It's going to be flashy. Like, that one's going to look great. I'm going to get my playset of that. So I'm happy that I don't have to deal with the ugly Flame Blast Bolt anymore. And I got to play a card with a cooler name.
I don't know if it's on your list, but I remember... So there was one card I saw. I got to see if I can... I can't remember the name of it. All I remember is the cost. It was red. And I can remember the art. Here it is. What do you think about this card? Because this card seems like it could be really good. For seemingly no reason. So it's flick
two
a coin.
And a red, flick. Yeah, you read it out.
So flick a coin is 2 and a red, instant speed. Flick a coin deals 1 damage to any target. You create a treasure token. Then draw a card. So it just can ping something, either to your opponent's face, you know, a 2-1 or whatever you can think of like that you can hit in Pioneer, like an elf or whatever. I know this is turn 3, so you're a bit late on that regard. But then it cantrips itself.
Brad, I understand that it might not be a reasonable comparison. This card has the exact same mana cost as Fable of the Mirror Breaker.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's my answer, right?
But
for
Fable,
the same mana.
Fable
this is
will,
an instant.
Will...
sure, right? But it's just this card costs 2 mana too much. Now, I guess for 1 mana, this card would be kind of cracked because it's basically 0 mana because it makes a treasure.
Yeah.
But this card wouldn't even be playable at 2 mana, I think. But then it may be okay. Then I could see it like as like a niche, weird filler 60th card in Phoenix or something. Because it's 1 mana and it draws a card and could deal with an elf a turn too late, I guess. But For three mana, this card is just ass. It's cool.
All right.
Right, a friend of mine has a coin flip commander deck, and even though this doesn't actually flip coins, and the card says flick coins, he wants to put it in. But I'm like, hey, that's cool. Right? I've cast Needle Drop before. These cards are satisfying to play. But maybe some Thermo Alchemist nonsense would play this. It makes it untap treasure so you can bargain. Right? Like,
true.
You know, from now on, whenever we see treasures, we don't just... Often when I saw a card that made a treasure, I kind of just read it that this card cost one mana less. But on top of that, this... You can bargain with them. The funniest one is the counterspell from this set, because that costs less if you bargain it. But, you know, if you sacrifice a treasure, it would... it would achieve the same goal, so... That was a little sillier. I forgot.
What was it called?
No, more up. It's got like Chill Out or something. Which I guess is kind of cool.
Ice out. Hey, it's Elsa.
That's just cancel, but then bargain it costs one less. But obviously bargain.
Speaking of Elsa, you should play Lorcana with me, Alex.
They're reprinting it now. I believe I heard there's another print run. So I hope that it's going to be a bit more accessible. And when I see it somewhere, I'm buying the starter decks to play with my girlfriend. So
it's so much fun. I did not think I'd have as much fun as I played. Also, by the way, just right off rip, the rules of the game are like, you can play with, you know, between two and four players. And I was like, you can just start up playing Commander with just initially. That's awesome. It's not actually Commander, but like...
You're kind of searching, you're kind of like reaching your own goal, right? It's sort of like you get up to a certain amount of points you win. You don't knock your opponent down, which is obviously a lot more friendly for multiplayer.
Yes and no. I play with two other friends. There's two people I actually, you know, at SnapCon was an event I recently went to. It was in Tampa. It was a Marvel Snap convention, essentially. And I was helping do a lot of the behind the scenes stuff and like setting up. And two of the guys that I did that with, I went to one of their houses who actually lives right down the street from me now to go play Lorcana because they got all the starter decks. And I was like, yeah, I'll come, I'll play. And we played a bunch of games with all three of us. And then we played a few games cycling out 1v1 to see how that was different. And there is a bit of a difference in terms of the racing, in terms of how fast, because there is interaction in the sense of like you need to challenge the opponent's cards or attack your opponent's creatures, things like that.
Yeah, I can imagine you do that less in multiplayer because the downside of multiplayer. So multiplayer is more of like a race to the finish. And when you play 1v1, there's a bit more merit to actually trying to stop your opponent from winning rather than you winning as fast as possible.
The game really feels like Dragon Ball Z to me. Dragon Ball Super or whatever.
I haven't played that. But like every card can be a resource, right? At least most cards can also be played as a resource.
Yeah, so in the top left, there's a little symbol where the cost is. And the one that has the swirly symbol is the one you can use as your ink, which is your mana. It's been really cool, really fun game. I recommend anyone else who likes card games like Magic to give it a try, because even if Disney isn't your thing, just imagine it in a different skin and focus on the gameplay itself and not the Disney aspect.
If people have been able to stick around for Magic with all the alternate art universes beyond bullshit we've been going through, you can handle, you know, if Lorcana wasn't being made, we would have had a Disney secret lair at this point, right? We would have had
probably,
you know, like fucking Snapcaster Mage, but it's Mickey, right? We'd have had that. So it's not that far. And I do find it funny now that I've seen a whole bunch of adults on the internet go like, oh my god, I pulled a Tinkerbell. I'm like,
isn't it great?
Like half a year ago this would have sounded so cringe, and now everyone's like, yeah, got your Tinkerbell.
It's a great game. I think the entry to card design or card like deck building is a lot clearer, because like once you play a few games with your starter deck and you start seeing what other cards are in the set, you're like, oh, these are easy swaps. Like these are, especially coming from Magic, I found that to be so easy of like, yeah, this is bad, this is good, why is this not a four of in the deck, why is it a three of, give me four of these. Like there's an opt in the control deck that you would like. It's the blue and silver deck. It's essentially like a ramping like control deck, and there's an opt in the deck. Just look at actually, it's more so. I'm sure a card we'll talk about. Sleight of hand. Yeah. It's actually straight up this. It's literally sleight of hand. It's look at the top two cards, put one in your hand, the other one on the bottom. That is literally the text on one of the cards in Orkana, and it's a three of in the starter deck. And I'm like, why is this not? Yeah. First thing I did, I'm like, yep, that's gonna go out. The shitty one drop. Here's a better one drop. Easy, four of them. Awesome. And I'm like, just that one change, my deck is suddenly better. Also, real quick before we switch over, I just want to say one more thing about Orkana. The colors mean jack shit, except in the sense that you can only, in Constructed, Limited's different, but in Constructed, you're limited to one or two colors in a deck. So you can't go like... I think there's six at the moment.
Ooh.
Yes, yeah, six.
That's kind of hefty, actually.
No, I don't. It's eight, I think. Because it's like steel, emerald, amethyst. It's basically like purple, blue, green, red, yellow, steel. Is that? Are there only three starter decks? If there's only three starter decks, it's six. If there's four starter decks, it's eight.
Sure.
So yeah. I think it's three. I think it's six. But still, yeah, you can do. And as the cool thing is, as we were playing, we're like, oh, this would be like this color with the color of your deck and the cards you're doing and what my deck's trying to do. Those would seem to work really well together, and like the brewing ideas are super cool.
Yeah, the only thing I'm always skeptical about with new card games is like when you design a card game for the first time and you kind of make your first set, you can really design the set in a vacuum. So like, if you know what you're doing, it kind of can't be bad, right? But then when the game expands, that's when the cracks start to show. Like, you know. Quick one-minute tangent. When Hearthstone was initially designed and the base set was in the game, the designer straight up said, like, yeah, why does this card deal 5 damage? It's like, well, because this, like, why does this mage spell deal 5 damage? It's like, well, it's because that druid minion has 7 health and we don't want this spell to kill that minion. Right? They could, their design could be, like, that direct. But now that you're a decade later... You can't do that anymore because now this one removal spell is not interacting with 40 different creatures. It is interacting with 400 different creatures. And that's when the cracks can start to show. But even at that point, you know, it's Disney themed. It's fun. Like it's a cool way to introduce partners or children or whatever to card games. So even then at the end, I'll probably just buy the starter decks. And even if the game ends up like flopping or whatever, I just keep the starter decks and I just, have a little board game to play.
I mean, it's Disney, and they're already showing advertisement all over the parks and stuff. So I would be shocked if the game flops, because I mean, it's Disney.
More people playing card games, more better, right? Even if it's not the card game you're playing, just showing the mainstream folks that hey, look, card games are actually still cool in 2023. And it's a physical card game. So, hey, physical card games are cool. You can go ahead and play it somewhere with people, right? And then if people see, oh, that's a real strength to a card game, and then they hear about Magic the Gathering, they're like, oh, that's physical too? Oh, like, that's what I thought was really cool about Lorcana. So even if I don't like Lorcana, if I'm hopping to a different game, that makes Magic more appealing. So, you know, what is it, the saying, like a rising tide raises all ships kind of deal?
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about that when we talk about bands and shit. play Lorcana is really cool. There's a surprising amount of depth to it, so I think it's awesome.
Now, next card could straight up be a Lorcana card, but the way it looks, it is Werefox Bodyguard. So it's a white card.
I saw that one. I saw the art.
Yeah, this could straight up be a Lorcana card, so perfect segue, at least the way it looks. This, you could just be like, my girlfriend's gonna roast me for not knowing which of the Disney stories that fits well in. It's the one
Robin Hood.
It's the one where, God, this is gonna be so bad, where the girl isn't allowed to like touch the spinning wheel and she's like sent off into the forest to live with fairies. Like, and then, is this like, It's Maleficent's in it too. It's that one. It's
Sleeping
not,
Beauty?
It's not Sleeping Beauty, I think, because that's with the apple when she eats it.
No, that's Snow White. Sleeping Beauty is the one that's Aurora.
Oh, yeah, no, it is Sleeping Beauty. Yeah, so it is
and
Sleeping
Maleficent
Beauty.
Is the villain.
Yeah, yeah, no, it is Sleeping Beauty. Like, this looks okay. Like it could be in Sleeping Beauty. Anyway, sure. Werefolk's Bodyguard is a three-mana card. It is a 1WW for a 2/2 Elf Fox Knight. They're short words, so they all fit it on the card. With Flash. And it says, when Werefolk's Bodyguard enters the battlefield, exile up to one other target non-Fox creature until Werefolk's Bodyguard leaves the battlefield. And then for 1WW, you can sacrifice Werefolk's Bodyguard and you gain 2 life. This is just a very good Fiend Hunter-esque effect. Obviously, it doesn't have the tribal synergy of Brutal Cathar, but in return, you get Flash, which is huge on a card like this. And I think the activated ability is actually kind of nice. Let's say you get into a situation where, like, you know, you exile something off your opponent and they want to play a board wipe. And then you're like, all right, but before the board wipe, sack this, you can have your card back, and now it dies to the board wipe. That's sweet.
Yeah.
It having Flash means you can flash it in to protect something more important.
You could also do this as a control player if you're the one with the board wipe.
Yeah.
Right? So you can, if you have the mana, of course, but you would basically sack it, give them their thing back, so then you gain 2 life, and then you wipe the board. So this is a great little tech for Azorius control players, too.
Yeah, it could be like an Azorius Flash is obviously like, this is the same mana cost as Spellqueller. So now you have a counter spell and a removal spell at this mana cost. I could see this replace Brutal Cathar in humans. Like, I know it's not a human, which obviously makes it a bit frustrating, but the mana cost doesn't matter. It's mono white, right? Most of your lands is plains, so that doesn't really matter. You don't play cards like Unclaimed Territory. And Flash is valuable. And the protection, right? Your opponent goes a board wipe. Well, I flash this in and protect my Adeline from the board wipe, so my rebuild is fast. That's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
you can target your
like...
own stuff is really big
with
this.
And sometimes you want your Brutal Cathar to remove something, but it's Knight and it's a werewolf. And that sucks. So I've seen that happen where people want to get rid of my card. And I'm like, actually, it's Knight. That is a 3/3 with first strike. And which is not what you want because you want your card to be consistent. So, yeah, I think this card's great. And I think this is going to see a lot of play.
And you mentioned the fact that it not being a human kind of can suck. But I think the fact that you pointed out the way you can use it as a protection spell to target your own things makes the fact that it's not a human and has this flavor to it a bit better, because it wouldn't work if it was a human. You couldn't. It said target non-human, right? So
yeah,
this
true.
Makes it so like it's a buddy in the deck of like this. It's the friend of man or whatever. You can protect
like
cards.
This would have probably said non-human if it was a human. So then it wouldn't have had half the utility.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. I think it's really cool. It has a lot of flexibility in the sense of where it can be played, and the when it can be played, even like within the context of a game. So yeah, I think this could be cool in humans. It could be cool in a lot of different things. You can go into Azorius Flash. It could just be good in mono white random bullshit,
mono
with like book stuff,
cards, monument, like blue white monument or some shit.
I wouldn't be opposed to it. Yeah, I like this card a lot.
All right, then my number 2 card, I already hinted at this earlier, and then you did too, is Sleight of Hand. So this was one of the first cards that was spoiled for this set, and I kind of immediately was like, this just has to be one of the best cards in the set, right? Sleight of Hand, for ones who don't know it, is 1 blue mana for a sorcery, and it says, look at the top 2 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand, and the other on the bottom. So it's just a cantrip. It's kind of opt, but you get to do the scry, like, mid-cast. This is the 12... Now we can have 12 good cantrips in Phoenix, which is huge, right? We might literally get to the point where you are cutting cantrips because you've got too many. Well, that's never really a problem. That's a problem you like to have. It is the first good cantrip that is a sorcery, because the other ones are both instants, and that makes Finale of Promise more playable again in Phoenix, and even, I think, gives Phoenix a future post-Treasure Cruise ban, if that were to ever happen, right?
Yeah.
If Phoenix now goes over the top, and you would lose Treasure Cruise, well, with all these cantrips at different speeds and Finale of Promise, as then your, like, new sort of over-the-top spell, might mean that Phoenix is now kind of set up for the future no matter what happens. I think future is, I think Phoenix is going to be very good now just because of this great cantrip. I've cast Sleight of Hand before. This card is awesome to play with. And even if they do catch a ban at one point, now they're future-proofed. So, you know, if I'd be a Phoenix player, I would be happy either way.
Does develop your brain? Hold on. Or is it your mind?
Why are you randomly... Oh, yeah, you're looking up the Lorgana card. I was like, you randomly Googled develop your brain. And I was like, gosh, do I sound that incoherent?
So yeah, TCG player takes. Yeah, see, look at the top two cards of your deck. Put one in your hand, and the other one on the bottom of your deck. It's straight up sleight of hand.
Straight up sleight of hand.
And they had the goal to put three of these in the starter deck. Get the fuck out of here. Same cost, everything. It's literally the exact same card. Very good. But yeah, big question for you, Alex. Of course, this card's be good. Of course, this card's be, you know, flexible, and it's a cantrip. We can say that over and over again and scream it from the hilltops. I don't give a shit about any of that. What I care about, Alex, is what art will you be using?
Ooh, can you give me the options? I'm looking at...
These are all the options.
New art.
These are, I mean, technically, you can, all of them? You can do the old border. Yeah, there's only these many. Four.
I might go for a controversial one here. I would go for... Is it Dual Master? Double Master? The third one.
This one here?
Yeah. I don't know what the set is.
Ultimate Masters.
Is that Ultimate Masters? Yeah, I think I'd go for Ultimate Masters. I find 7th edition looks a little bit out of place. I like the sort of like hand trick, like the fake hand. I think sort of the ghost hand is kind of cool. But it just straight up just is, it's just a picture of a woman. It's just like,
yeah,
I don't
but
know.
This one in particular is $100 for each card. So,
oh my god. And the other sleight of hand is just like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Like, is this, like, it's kind of funny, but it's just such a weird character. I don't know what to make. This is like, is it like Portal? Yeah, this is like Portal.
It is Portal.
Portal art's always a little off, too, to me.
This is Portal, Portal Second Age, is what this
and,
is.
And I'm the boring person who often likes modern art. My favorite Snapcaster Mage art is Modern Masters. Like, I don't mind admitting to that either. So sometimes I can be.
You can't go wrong with a new one because look at this
guy's
hat. Isn't that amazing? Holy shit! What a hat that is. He is just flabbergasted as he's watching the guy just do cool things. Really fun to look at. It is kind
of a funny one because like the sleight of hand is being done by like a pixie and stuff. It's like it's a fun one.
This sleight of hand's kind of cool. I thought he was holding a heart at first. Would have made it a lot cooler. Kind of sad he's not holding a heart. Well.
Yeah, you can go, oh yeah, no. This is the one you need. You need 9th edition. Because this is more modern looking art. So there's a good chance that boomers aren't going to like it. And 9th edition white bordered is the extra tilt. So like, if you want to up
the
mental
border.
Game, white bordered 9th edition. Like, absolutely. Look at how hideous
that
border is.
Is there a white-bordered opt? Oh my god, I can't just type in opt because then I get Optimus Prime as a result. Fuck. What the fuck?
Damn it, Optimus Prime. Oh, there's been a billion now.
There's no white border? It's gold border from the World Championship? Fuck off.
That's the one you show up with. But no, Brad, you just make your own white border. I've white bordered my own guards.
This is only $3? It's not legal technically, but it's only $3. I mean, you can't go wrong with the Yargle.
True.
Man. All right. Do you have any honorable mentions? Any underrated cards you feel about this?
I'll go with my honorable mention first, just because, earlier this year, January 28th, why did you pulling up fucking Optimus Prime?
It's so fucking funny.
I dared Watsy. I made a Twitter post and I said, I dare Watsy to print this card. And I took Divination and I crossed out the word Sorcery and I put Instant there. And you know what? Half a year later, it actually fucking happened. So
he did it.
Quick study. Finally, Brad, a card without 1,000 words. It's 2 and a blue. For an instant, you draw 2 cards. That's it. There's room for 5 lines of flavor text on this card.
That's so much flavor text.
Unbelievable. That is more flavor than the entirety of March of the Machine. On one card.
I just love how the flavor is more than the name of the card, the type, the cost, the effect. Like, that's
insane.
Multiple
times. Like...
Yeah.
The whole rules text of the card fits into the flavor text like 2 or 3 times. How great is that?
Could they give us reminder text for draw 2? Like, can we get that, please? Can we get reminder?
Can we do the Pot of Greed thing?
Yeah.
Discard. I just wish the card said, discard allows me to take the top 2 cards of the deck and add them to my hand. And then your opponent would have to call a judge and see if that's still negated by Narset. Wait,
well,
is this
wording
counted
in that
as
sense.
Putting in hand? Or is this just the definition of what drawing a card is?
Yes.
Anyway, I don't know if this card is good enough, frankly. There's obviously quite some competition in draw spells. But just, when we had Memory... Well, when we got Memory Deluge, there was a lot going on where it's sort of like... You put people in a bind of, like, is it Wandering Emperor or is it card advantage, right? Or is it maybe Settle the Wreckage or still is it a counter? You kind of put people in an awkward bind. Hard counter spells are 3 mana, generally. So putting the opponent, you can kind of get them in awkward positions again. Or, like, just the idea that your counter spells and your removal are the same mana cost, and then, like, your removal is, like, 1 or 2 mana... It just, like, makes the math work, I feel like, where, like, oh, if I don't have to counter it, like, let's say you have 4 mana, and you're like, I kind of need to, like, push their goblin token, right? Because I'm playing against Fable for the millionth time, so I have to push their goblin token, and I want to hold up my counter spell. Well, now if they don't play anything worthwhile, well, I can't cast my Memory Deluge because I had to push the goblin token. So either I have to let them attack with the goblin token, let them get a treasure, lose 2 life, kind of don't want to do that. And then if they play their Shieldred, well, you counter it and I guess I'll push the goblin token after the fact. Right? It can get awkward. But when the mana cost in your deck lines up like this, you can suddenly get like really smooth play patterns. And even though the card is a little bit weaker, that can overall make your deck function better, therefore making it stronger. So I obviously ordered a playset of this card because it's a common, so it's not like it set me back a lot of money. And I hope this is going to be good. I really enjoy simple cards like this. Like, just straight up, I had 1 card, and now I have 2. So I am very obviously ahead, right? Sure, you've spent mana, so because this is not Pot of Greed. But yeah, just an awesome card. I am super stoked when I saw this. And I'm going to hopefully be casting it a lot. Because I hope it's going to be good.
What the fuck is there to say about a card that just says draw 2? Yeah. The only thing that makes it
lot
better
if you're me, because
greed.
I get enthusiastic about cards with little text, but...
Well,
like,
you know...
If we're talking about, like, Lorcana and stuff, I think that's also often the magic with new games, is that they can be simpler. Right? You can have a set with Sleight of Hand and Lightning Bolt and, you know... all those type of cards, and it still is exciting because it's a card we didn't have before because the game didn't exist.
I mean, look, it's not all super simple. There's some complexity.
Oh, I'm not saying it doesn't have to be, but you can make simple cards be exciting. And in Magic now, it's very hard for simple cards to be exciting. Right? We can't print a 1-mana 3/3. Like, it'd be exciting, but it'd probably be broken. But we've already done $17? Vanilla 1-mana 2/2s.
She's a vanilla 1/1 for one. Oh, she taps for two. She or exerts for two fucking things. God, that's really... She's $17? That is kind of good in this game. She's also a mythic.
Oh, God.
What a game. What a game this is. Hey, but I recommend playing it. Yeah, you get weird shit like this. Like, you just, like... You pay one less for broom characters, then whenever one of your broom characters is banished from the challenger, you turn that card to your hand.
I sold this card. I couldn't figure out what a broom character was. With Lorcana.
Related stuff.
Anyway, for the people who don't have the visuals, you scrolling through Lorcana cards is probably going to be very confusing. So,
there's only one broom card so far, by the way.
Wonderful.
Brooms.
Going into switching back to the real card game, and going into my, I guess, overrated card. I don't have too much to go off, but this looked like a card when I was pointed out to like what this card like meant. I was like, oh, people are gonna think this is too better than it is. It's the Iron Crag. It's a colorless card, 2 mana.
We're getting there.
You know, from Iron Crag feet, it's the thing.
Oh.
The Iron Crag is a 2 colorless mana legendary artifact. It taps for colorless, and then it says, whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may have the Iron Crag become a legendary equipment artifact named Everflame Hero's Legacy, because this card needed more words on it. If you do, it gains equip 3, and equipped creature gets +3/+3 and loses all other abilities. So if you got a legendary enter the battlefield, this becomes a bad equipment. Basically. However, what could be exciting about this card is that it is the first 2-mana mana rock in Pioneer. We don't have Signets, we don't have Mind Stone, we don't have Felwar Stone, we don't have any of those cards. So the Iron Crag being the first 2-mana mana rock is kind of exciting. And, you know, that means now every deck can make the skip from 2 to 4 that green can do with Wolf Willowhaven. Which I'm sure a lot of people have had the experience of, I killed the elf, and then I still played against a Karn on turn 3. And now everyone can do that. Hooray. But this card is just, like, exceptionally bad, like, with everything else. Like, a colorless mana rock is already not that good, because, you know, colored mana can often, like, be sort of a restricting factor when you're trying to jump the curve. For example, when you're trying to double spell and still have cards like Mutavault in your deck. It doesn't sack for a card. It just becomes a bad equipment. It's also legendary. So like, there's so much going against this card that I would be shocked if this card sees play like basically anywhere. I could see this card as a one-off in like my Power Stone Shard combo deck. Because that card would probably play a bad Mind Stone.
Just give us Mind Stone.
But yeah, like Mind Stone is like infinitely better than this card.
Yeah, of course, you get the draw aspect of it.
Yeah, you eventually get to cash in the card. You can draw it in multiples. You can't do that with this card. It does nothing when it leaves the battlefield, so there's nothing like, oh, but I get to legend rule it and get some sort of benefit out of it. The equipment sucks. So like, this card's just bad, but it's a 2-mana mana rock, so people are gonna put it in decks that it shouldn't be in.
It's a good thing I didn't go to the pre-release tonight, because this would have been my pre-release rare.
Yeah, this is very much a this is my pre-release rare kind of card.
I'm sure it looks really pretty, though.
Card. Yeah, it's cool.
In foil.
Going to an underrated card is Bitter Chill. So it's a blue card.
Yep. If I were to make a top 10, this would have been my number 10.
Bitter Chill is 1 and a blue for an enchantment aura. It says, enchant creature. When Bitter Chill enters the battlefield, tap enchanted creature. Enchanted creature doesn't untap during its controller's untap step. When Bitter Chill is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you may pay 1. If you do, scry 1, then draw a card. Keep in mind, that's kind of cool with bargain, because this is an enchantment you control, yeah. So you can get rid of it for bargain, which is probably going to be more relevant for limited. Like, when you don't really care about the creature anymore, you can cash the enchantment in for a bargain and then scry 1, draw 1. It's just that we've seen cards like Bubble Snare, and I think there's another one like Something the Beast or something. It's from Ikoria. We've seen this card see play, And those tended to be one mana, but they don't tap the creature. But I think, for example, with like the Tame the Beast or whatever it's called, there's a pretty hefty cost to pay if you do want to tap the creature. I think Bubble Snare doesn't, but like there's a kicker of three. So it's suddenly a four mana card that actually makes the creature tap. This one is one mana more, but because it taps it and then keeps it tapped, it's kind of just a removal spell in blue for all intents and purposes. Obviously, it doesn't like remove the abilities of a Shieldred or something, so it isn't straight up a removal spell, but it is kind of a removal spell. And the fact that if it dies, well, it's put into a graveyard, if you have mana lying around, you could just get a new card. I think it's very valuable for like tempo-y decks, like let's say like a mono-blue tempo-y deck or a mono-blue merfolk deck that would be looking for some sort of removal post-board. I always felt like when I play like more aggressive decks, you kind of reluctantly put removal in, right? Because like I put removal in because I have to, right? Because if I'm staring down some Lyra Dawnbringer kind of card, I just automatically lose if I don't have a counterspell for it right there and then. And so this card helps with that. But because you put a removal in reluctantly, when they then eventually, like, well, they've countered the removal, or they, like, get rid of your Bubble Snare or something, it can feel really bad because you're like, I already lost a card trying to deal with this, so I'm now winning less, right? Because that could have been a creature I could have been attacking with. But now that removal spell didn't do anything, and now I'm still fucked, right? And this card can mitigate that a little bit. So I think this is, like, a kind of fringe sideboard card out of mono blue decks. So I don't think it's going to see a ton of play, but it is among the better versions of this effect we've ever seen. And it's proactive.
Yeah, I mean, there's no downside to it. Usually there's some kind of downside to these kind of cards.
Well, I guess just the downside is that tap, keep a creature tapped at sorcery speed with an aura is just not a very good card in general. But this is about as good as it gets for these cards, I think.
Yeah, no, I get that. I like it a lot. I think this could be better than we could even give it credit for now. But I'm also more willing to play these kind of effects. And I think it's like one of those things where, like, to give you a quick example, over in Snap, they have OTAs where like they'll just change like a number. Like let's say instead of it being a 5/8, they change a card to a 5/7. And then a lot of times people were like, well, now that card's not playable. They nerfed it. Can't play it anymore. And then it's just like, then a month later they realize, oh, this still has an insane win rate. It's still really good. This kind of gives me like, as Magic evolves, there is something to be said about certain types of effects that, like, yes, in a lot of cases, there is power creep that is straight up, there's better versions of this or better end goal results of like what you're trying to do with like the same mana cost. But sometimes cards like this can still be valuable even in today's Magic, where on paper it seems like they're way less of a card than they used to be.
Yeah, I think what Frank Karsten, I think I saw on Twitter, he pointed out, maybe more relevant for Twitter for Limited, but I can even see it for Constructed. Again, with a card like Bubble Snare, I think so far was maybe the best one of this effect, but that was four mana to tap something down, which meant that it was kind of hard to be proactive with it. So, like, if your opponent had some sort of, like, let's say, like, an Elder Gargaroth was their defensive card, well, that card has Vigilance, so, first of all, it would never even work, but you need to, like, so if it's, like, a Lyra Dawnbringer, like, do you wait for your opponent to swing with it before you can interact with it sort of, like, favorably? Well, that probably means not attacking for a turn, and, like, that could be crucial. And the fact that this card has the immediate tap for only two mana means you can, like, keep up the aggression better than you could with the other cards that have seen play.
No, yeah, I agree. I think I'll give it a try. We'll see how it goes.
All right, and then number one, which I think most people would have seen coming at this point, it is a black card, and it is called Beseech the Mirror. I don't know what it means to beseech something, but she's very intensely looking at it, so I guess that's
what I know what besmirch means. Is beseech the mirror to beckon to, or to to call out to request.
Definitely.
Yes, ask urgently if you were to do something. Yes.
Right, so you ask the mirror, like, mirror, mirror on the wall, please give me a shieldred. Or,
hey.
I missed the rhyme, but this isn't a modder podcast. Mirror, mirror on the wall, give me the one ring to rule them all. Because that's the card you're getting with it in modern. And then you're getting your shieldred because you're mono black. But yeah, Beseech the Mirror is one black for a sorcery with bargain. So again, throw away an artifact, an enchantment, or a token as you cast a spell. Search your library for a card. Exile it face down, then shuffle. If this spell was bargained, you may cast the exiled card without paying its mana cost if that spell's mana value is 4 or less. Put the exiled card into your hand if it wasn't cast this way. Wording? This works with Valky, right? Or not? Actually, I don't think it does, because it now says if that spell's mana value is 4 or less, and I think Bring to Light just says tutor a card and then you can cast it. No, I think you're better off looking at Bring to Light, how the wording is on Bring to Light.
Here I am thinking that's easier to find.
Yeah, because that is search your library for a creature, instant, or sorcery with mana value less than equal to number of colors. Cast a spell, exile it card, shuffle. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost. But Beseech the Queen, I think on the second part, specifies if its mana cost is 4 or less. And that's not the case for Tybalt, because it's a 7 mana card. So, doesn't work. No 4 mana Tybalts for you. Unless you want to pay the 3 mana Tybalt. But this is just, it's Diabolic Tutor, which is obviously a terrible card. But if you bargain, which is a pretty small cost, especially in today's Magic, where we have a shit ton of tokens and artifact tokens and small enchantments less, but definitely artifacts and especially tokens lying around, it's going to be very easy to bargain this in the type of deck that wants to bargain for it. And then it's just 4 mana, but your shieldred comes out of your deck instead of your hand. This is just like a Yu-Gi-Oh card, where it's just one of those cards that's like, search your deck for a card named, I don't know, like Sky Strikers Bollocks, and then put it onto the battlefield. And you're like, oh, okay, right? I just get to straight up just get this card and cast it. And it's any card. It can be Languish, or Ritual of Soot, or Kalidus, or, again, your Shieldred. And because bargaining this is pretty easy, again, it's not going to be, like, trivial to bargain, right? There's going to be a cost to it. You know, you're going to...
I mean, in Rakdos midrange, you're already playing things like... So let's paint a picture, okay?
Bloodtithe Harvester.
Bloodtithe Harvester makes you a blood... Or worst case, you're playing on 3 Fable. You're getting your little guy, your little goblin. You swing in, you know, pre-combat, or you know, you go to combat, swing in, make a treasure, and then you can bargain your treasure, get your shoulder down. And
you're if it can't attack, you can bargain the shaman. Or if they kill the shaman, you can bargain and throw it with the Fable. So. You know, you've already gotten chapter 1 and 2, and then you're like, sure, I'm not going to get the backside of Fable, but my board is empty, and I'm going to be left with the Shieldred, and it can't target legendary creatures, so whatever, I'm just going to throw away my Fable. And I think what you end up, you know, because this is definitely what Rakdos midrange needed, is that we're going to have Beseech the Mirror in the deck, and you're going to have, like, 4 Beseech and 3 Shieldred, and then a massive fucking toolbox in your sideboard. Like, with, like, 1 Kalidus, 1 Languish, 1 Ritual of Soot, 1 Extraction Effect. And you kind of get to do, like, a mono-green impression post-board.
Yeah.
You know, which is, again, infinite versatility is definitely what Rakdos midrange needed, so... Yeah, that's why this card is net number 1. I'm sure that I am overselling how easy this is to bargain. And you're going to be in situations where you're like, shit, this is a Diabolic Tutor, which is an unplayable card. And this card is actually harder to cast because there's an extra black in the mana cost. So it's not free. Again, if you go for the three shield with four Beseech Dimera, you might be biting yourself in the ass. But
I mean, there's other things too. Like this could be for Rakdos Sacrifice to go get your Mayhem Devil, right? You have food tokens lying around. You have the cat.
The oven, you could do multiple, right? You could just do that.
Or you could do like a more the Golgari combo deck with Bolts of Citadel. Of course, this cannot go get Bolts of Citadel for free, but you can go find it.
Oh, that too.
You can just find it in general, but yeah, you can do Coco. Coco is awesome with this. So yeah, there's a lot of places this card can go into that has a lot of different random things to bargain. And unfortunately, so far, what I'm thinking of is just a lot of Golgari and Rakdos, essentially.
Yeah, especially because they are the ones that are good at making the tokens and stuff to sacrifice.
Yes.
So, like, bargaining in a... I talked about this before, I think, before Eldraine came out, where I was like, what bothers me when I'm playing, like, slower, not just control decks, but, like, slower decks, is that a lot of modern low-curve decks, they tend to just put a lot of shit on the battlefield, right? Like, you're five turns into the game and your opponent's got like two treasures and a clue and a power stone shard and like whatever, right? They have a bunch of random crap and your deck is playing big creatures and interaction spells, so you don't really generate a bunch of random garbage. And bargain is literally just, well, turn your random garbage into good effects for free.
Especially ones that leave behind tokens too when they die.
So the fact that like Beseech the Mirror, that's just gonna be good in the modern design, generate a bunch of garbage cards, garbage decks. So yeah, that's what I kind of hate about this card. Like, this card is, it's very good with modern design cards, and it's kind of bad with old school design cards. And I don't necessarily like the modern design direction. So cards like Beseech the Mirror, you know, just make that design that I like less better. Because I kind of hate when I have a game of Magic where my opponent has 1,000 pieces of cardboard. Especially because no one ever brings their tokens for some fucking reason. So I have a samurai token that is quote unquote a goblin attacking me. And then there are two flipped ad cards that are clues. And then there is, like, a day-night card that is actually a treasure on the field, right? And then there is an actual day-night card to track day and night. So having so much crap on the battlefield, I don't really like. But if we're just talking about power, I think this card is extremely good. If this doesn't get at least one copy, but I'm pretty sure... 2 or 3 copies. Yeah, it's hilarious how expensive the Goblin Shaman token is.
And that's why you see random ass tokens for this, like, whatever. Like,
no, I don't. People, stop that fucking excuse. You take any card, shove it in a sleeve, you rip out a random piece of paper, and you write Goblin Shaman when attacks make a treasure on it.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Like, you know, I was joking about the samurai token because remember a friend, Kevin, actually, hi Kevin, if you're listening, for Wandering Emperor has just like stick figure samurais drawn on. It's like, it doesn't need to be the actual samurai token, but I can tell apart the samurai token from the clue token. And that's all I need, right? But I think I saw a tweet from Aspiring Spike, which is like, you're a soldier now, and then like, it's like random unsleeved card.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's not much more to say about the power of Beseech the Mirror. It tutors up ridiculous 4-drops. And Pioneer, even through cards like Fable, even has ridiculous 3-drops that I can absolutely see people tutoring up a Fable with Beseech. Like, oh, there's a bunch of garbage in my hand that I would rather be ditching next turn. Let's just get a Fable. Or maybe for a long matchup, there's a Phyrexian Arena in your deck. Or maybe you're playing like a mono black deck and there's just straight up Phyrexian Arena in your deck. And you'd go and tutor that. Or, like you said, you know, I might not be able to cast it, but I'm going to tutor the Gary because I want to cast it next turn.
Yeah.
Right? Why not? Right? You played random garbage on turn one, turn two, you interacted a bit on turn three, you played like an Underworld Dreams, and you're like, well, time to go and get a Gary. And you go and do that.
And that's one thing I think people need to remember is, like, yes, always evaluate cards and think of, like, the best case scenario that you can do with these cards, right? Think of all the four and below that you can go get and just cast it for free and be very happy when you do so, of course. But you have to remember the niche moments in your game where you're like, well, I'm just happy to be able to get this fucking thing in my hand, right? Like, that's can be just as important and just as game deciding as the free cost.
And I think it's also like opportunity cost, right? Don't go and put a bunch of Trial of Ambitions in your deck instead of your power word kills just so you can bargain Beseech the Mirror, right? Mm-hmm. I think Beseech the Mirror is definitely the kind of card that you have to reason the other way around. Like, hey, I'm playing a Rakdos deck. I have 1,000 random pieces of garbage on my battlefield at any point in the game. Why wouldn't I run Beseech the Mirror? I think that makes sense. But don't, you know, no one's going to build a Beseech the Mirror deck. You're going to build some sort of deck that can run Beseech the Mirror. I think that's more like how it's going to function, but still very good regardless. And yeah, in Modern, I saw from, was a Golgari guy, said like, I sacrifice my Orcish Bowmaster army token to tutor up the Wandering, and then like tap it, and then next turn I'm going to tap it again for more cards, and then I'm going to bargain Beseech the Mirror again to get a new Wandering, and now I have protection from everything again. Just like, oh no. I feel for you, Modern players. Like, I might actually pick up Modern again, but that's literally just for FNMs and stuff. So I think I made a tweet the other day where it's like, I want to play Storm. I saw Sleight of Hand. I saw Preordain was unbanned. I was like, I want to play Storm.
That sounds fun.
I want to play Baral again. I'd want to put a Baral on the battlefield. He's got beautiful new art from March of the Machine. I'd want to go Baral Go, and then I get Solituded for 0 mana, and then I'm going to be salty. I'm going to go home. But it's fine. I'm ready for it.
Man, the sets are... I need to sit down and actually like digest the entirety of this set, because there's a lot of cool-looking stuff in it. It's just I don't know how good a lot of it is.
Honestly,
like, the rat stuff seems cool.
The overall, like, feeling I get from the set, there is obviously a bunch of very good cards. You see another one, like, Not Dead at All. Very much a Modern card, but that is just Feign Death, I think, is already played, and this card is just straight up better than that. So, the set is strong. There's strong cards in it. But it does also feel like they really went for the flavor, which is not necessarily bad, but it just leaves you with like some kind of shitty cards. Like, most of the rat stuff, like, I'm sorry, but we're never going to have a competitive rat deck, right? Unless they literally print 15 rats in every set. But, like, you know, rats just aren't good unless they get a lot of support. Tribal decks already struggle. But they've made a lot of room in this set for that type of cards. Or, well, we have to do fairies, but fuck, let's not do a repeat of Lorwyn fairies. So there's no Bitter Blossom, there's no... Well, I guess there is the Thoughtseize. No Spellstutter Sprite, no... The fuck is it called? It's the 3-mana 3-1. Not the one that bounces. It's the one that looks at your opponent's hand and then puts a card away. Oh, I've cast this card so many times.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah,
No card like that. So it feels like tamer than Eldraine did before. But I do like it. I think it's a cool set.
Is this backwards? Did someone fuck up?
No. Just if you go back to the previous card.
No. Listen, I'm talking about this, the art. So this says Wicked, right? And you clearly see someone being turned into a toad.
Oh,
and the other one is Cursed, which is just the witch doing witch stuff. Shouldn't these pictures be swapped? Shouldn't Cursed be the toad? And then Wicked is just the witch?
Yeah, I hope that is actually true, because the Wicked and Cursed token seems to be reverse. So,
yeah, for those of you who aren't like watching this right now and see it, the Wicked... So on the cards that say, like, you know, create a Wicked thing or create a Cursed thing, the term Wicked has an art associated with it, and it's a toad. And there's a little lightning bolt and little sparkles. You can assume that it's a person that was turned into a toad, which is the classic witch's curse, right? That is like every fairy tale ever. I mean, fucking Shrek 2 did it. Come on. And then you have
a classic
cursed
fairy tale.
Yeah. Then you have Cursed on the flip side, which is just a witch making a brew in a witch's cauldron. So my critique here is that it clearly feels like Wicked should be the witch doing wicked things, like making a witch's cauldron. And then Curse should be the dude getting turned into a fucking frog or a toad. Like, that's the curse.
Yeah.
Who fucked up? Who's getting fired?
Just a quick rant, by the way, on this whole fucking roll token bullshit. This is like one of my most hated mechanics of all time, right? I was just talking about how I hate the fact that there's a billion tokens and people never bring their tokens, right? Now yeah. Just imagine the fucking horror scenario where you're like, no, this card with an add card is actually cursed, but this card with an add card is actually a young hero, but this card is actually wicked, and this card is actually a beast, but I didn't bring any of the tokens. Like, how?
The blue dice is this, the yeah, white dice is this.
Exactly. Like, well, this is...
But you also have so +1/+1 counters in your deck. What is this? What are we doing?
Yeah, like... It's so messy. This whole mechanic is so messy. Now, it really feels like a limited mechanic. Like, I think there's, like, fucking two good cards that, like, do this.
I think this one's kind of cool.
This could be playable.
The Spiteful Hexmage?
Yeah, like, the Spiteful Hexmage, like, is potentially playable. I think there's, like, one or two more that, like, make these tokens. So, it does, like, that, Not Dead After All, right? I think that creates a Wicked token. Instead yeah. of just putting a 1/1 counter on it, which is kind of annoying. But like, so yeah, you're going to play those. But just the mechanic overall just sucks. I just really wish we had that something like that.
Hmm.
But for now, that is about all I have to say on this set. And there's some powerful cards in it. It wasn't hard making a top 10 in that way, because like I think I ended up at about like 20 cards that I thought were like potentially playable, but then filtering it down to sort of like my quote-unquote obvious top 4, and then filling out the other 6 wasn't like too hard. I think I ended up having like 12 cards in contention, so I had a slight struggle making the top 10. But
are you telling me we got no fucking vampires in this goddamn set?
They weren't there last time. There's no vampires on Eldraine.
Why? Give me a vampire. Whatever. But yeah, I think the set looks cool. I'll dig more into it. We'll see what else we can come out with. I haven't seen anyone make any like brews so far with Pioneer. I know it's early. I think everyone just got access to them on MTGO and Arena and stuff like that. So we'll keep an eye on it and see what's going on. I think Beseech is pretty much a shoe-in for Rakdos midrange. What number that is, I don't know yet. If it's 4, I wouldn't be shocked, to be honest.
No, that's just going to take, like, just reps, right? Just see how high the number can go, how much random bullshit does this deck actually generate, and how often are we going to miss it, right? Obviously, you know, it's not actually random bullshit, because Rakdos Midrange tends to end with a pretty clean battlefield, right? Your food's used up in order to rummage through your cards, your Fable gone, your treasure's used for mana. So it's not like it has a lot of stuff lying around that it wouldn't do anything with. So in that way, bargain is a real cost. So I can see, like, they end up at, like, do. Right? I wouldn't be surprised. But if it's suddenly like, oh, we actually generate so much garbage, it's fine, and it's just a four off, like, it wouldn't shock me. I would be shocked if this card is unplayable.
Yeah, I don't think this is a repeat of that. What was that card that we got? The two mana search, the tutor.
Oh, Diabolic Tutor.
Yeah. So like, it's, we're not going to get a repeat of that, I don't think. I think the fact that you can just cheat out something effectively, even though it's not cheating out because you're capping yourself at that four for the free thing, but you're essentially, this is copies, you know, five through eight of whatever other cards you want in your deck. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, and it's...
Like a Shieldred.
Yeah, and like, it's copies 5 through 8 with Shieldred, but copies 5 through 8 aren't actually like knockoff Shieldred. They are actually Shieldred.
Yeah.
So like, not like Kalidus being your fifth Shieldred, quote unquote, or Phyrexian Obliterator, or whatever bullshit you want to put in. No, straight up, Shieldred, Shieldred, Shieldred.
Well, I hope for our viewers and listeners that they're not going to run into Besiege the Mirror too much in their play, at least in limited. Hopefully they actually have a very good time. I'm interested to see how the limited format is with this set. I enjoyed limited with Eldraine originally, so I see no reason why I wouldn't with this one. I don't know what the exact archetypes are for that, but I think it'd be a fun little puzzle to crack. But otherwise, I don't got nothing else for this set, Alex. Do you?
No.
All right, well, with that, we love you. We appreciate you. We hope you enjoy Eldraine to its absolute fullest, both in the sense of Pioneer and if you're a limited player, that as well. Because, again, this set does look really cool. There's going to be a lot of cool things to play with. And hopefully by the next time we come around with another episode, we'll have some cool decks to look at that feature some cards we maybe missed. Because every set always has something that we don't pick up on, right?
Or
that's going to be really good.
The Siege completely broke Rakdos and they're actually banning Fable.
You know, we could live. We could live and we can dream.
We can dream.
That'd be kind of cool. All right. Well, we love you guys. You're amazing. We appreciate you. And a quick shout out to our Patreon peoples. I don't have the list in front of me. I'm so sorry. I'm ill prepared. Oh, God. I guess I should pull it up. Well, let me stop screen sharing so I don't dox myself with a fucking whatever. That'd be cool.
So shout out to Kevin for starters.
Shout out to Kevin.
I haven't actually checked Anchor. Like, is he still subscribed on Anchor?
Well, here's the thing.
It would be funny if we've given him shout outs and he was just like, peace, like a decade ago already.
Anchor technically doesn't exist anymore. It got bought out by Spotify. So I don't know. That's a good question. Let me check real quick. So like, if I type in Anchor, it still leads you to, and it still leads you to podcasters for Spotify. So like I'd have to look.
Sorry, X.
Yeah. Except this one makes way more sense, right? It's still a name you recognize. Oh my God, I can't log in. It's being fucking stupid. All right, you know what? Sorry guys for Patreon. We love you. Appreciate you. I know it's epic. I know it's Oyvind is another one. We have two people of the same name. Oh God. Oh fuck. I feel like the worst person ever. I'm so sorry. But we love you. You're the best. Alex, can you log in? It's not letting me log in.
I haven't even. I'd have to log in and it hasn't saved anything. Quickly send me the details so I can log in. Then we just
wait,
cut this in post.
I got in.
Cut this in post.
Oops. We're not cutting in post. We're doing a live, God damn it. Hold on. So now I can go to creator. See, we're doing it. We're doing it okay. And for those of you who fucking stuck around this far, God bless you. You are insane for doing that. So our wonderful patrons. Wait. Oh my God. What the fuck?
Drum roll.
Yeah, I know. This is ridiculous. Arno, Oyvind, Dwayne, Aaron, Will, another Aaron, and Patrick and Bridger. There's the double. And then Epic and Janet. Those are our wonderful patrons. We appreciate you. You guys are the best. We love you so much.
I don't recognize Jenna. Is that... Are they new? Or is it just me having a bad memory?
They are new. They are brand new, actually.
Hey, welcome. Thank you very much. So,
welcome. Thank you for that. And as far as Kevin's concerned, I'm not going to try and log into our other thing. I don't know, because I have it organized by whatever. So I have to be logged into three different accounts for Spotify for Podcasters.
I'll just ask him. Yeah. Like, hey, Kevin, keep giving you shout outs. Am I doing that for free? Or?
But thank you so much. We love you. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.